Welcome to This Is Money podcast, sponsored by Charles Stanley Direct. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and Simon Lambert today is Helen Crane. And coming up, we're seeing a spike in 30-something-year-old borrowers taking on ultra-long mortgages, which will see them paying into their retirements. Are we just storing up big problems for the future? We have more on the great neck to robbery. Just what is owner Sainsbury's going to do about it? On the list of things the government needs to do, this was a bit of a surprise, I have to be honest, though not unimportant, are dazzling LED headlights about to be banned. And one reader ordered an iPhone 14 from Tesco Mobile, but received instead a toy version. Crane is back on the case. Plus, Simon often moans about higher earners in England being unfairly taxed. But do our friends in Scotland have it even worse? Ask this week's winner of our coveted This Is Money mug. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.
But first, there is a worrying increase in the number of home buyers that will end up paying their mortgages into their 70s. Now, this is according to FCA data obtained via a Freedom of Information request from wealth manager Quilter. It revealed a significant rise in the number of people over 36 years old who are taking out mortgage terms of 35 years or more, a 156% increase, in fact, on 2019. Helen, Simon, welcome. Helen, what is going on here and why?
Yeah, so this data, as you say, from Quilter, they've made a Freedom of Information request to the Financial Conduct Authority, and they found out that in the first 9 months of 2024, there were about 22,000 mortgages taken out with a term of 35 years or more. And these were taken out by people aged 36 or older. So that means they're going to be repaying those mortgages until they're 71, obviously taking them past the age of retirement. And there's been a big increase in this as well. And I think this is basically, this coincides with mortgage rates going up. People are looking at what their payments are going to be on their mortgage, and people who maybe would have taken a 30-year term, maybe even a 25-year term, obviously, until quite recently, most people did tend to take a 25-year mortgage. That's crept up in the last few years, you know, because of these higher rates. So they're thinking, maybe if my rate was 2%, the repayments would be affordable on a 25-year mortgage. But actually now I'm going to have to push that term longer to spread the repayments over a longer period. But each month, the payments themselves will be smaller. That obviously tees up a longer-term problem, because the longer you're repaying your mortgage, the longer time interest has to build up. So you end up paying, can be far more over the long run. You know, adding 5 years to a mortgage term can add tens, hundreds of thousands to the amount that you end up repaying overall. So it is a big issue, but I think it's a combination of, you know, higher mortgage rates, house prices are obviously or always just ticking higher. And I think people trying to get on the property ladder are just trying to find any way to bring that down a little bit. And if that means taking a longer mortgage, then that's something they're prepared to do.
Simon, what do you make of all this? That is a significant increase, 156%. Do you reckon it's a case of people taking on a mortgage now, getting an extra long term, but thinking optimistically that it's fine, they'll just cut the term, overpay as time goes on, etc.?
There might be a little bit of the latter, but actually I don't think that most people have any intention of doing that at all. And actually the reality of it is that most people don't do that. In fact, it's far more tempting for people to extend their mortgage terms as they go along and as they move home in order to just borrow that extra little bit of money. And what quite often happens is, say, for example, somebody starts with a 30-year mortgage and a 5-year fix, and then they move home at some, like in 5 years' time, they then go back to 30 years. It's not uncommon. So actually, it's more likely that people end up extending. It's rarer that people overpay or shorten their term. I think, as Helen said, what's going on here is a combination of a couple of things. One, obviously, affordability, high house prices compared to wages. It's a massive issue in this country. It's been a big issue in this country for quite some time. In fact, it's been a big issue in this country since before the financial crisis, and it's never really gone away. They've never got back to that longer term average compared to, you know, a multiple of wages. And there is a potentially they might not even go back there. And that is a problem. And the way that we've dealt with this is by extending mortgage, trying to squeeze ourselves into being able to afford to borrow. But there's also some changes that have happened to mortgages that have meant that effectively the system is doing this to people as well. So mortgage affordability-based lending means that lenders will look at your outgoings and your incomings, and they'll try to get you to hit a number to see how much you could borrow. Of course, obviously, for most people, it works in the way that they've found a property that they want to buy and they need to borrow a certain amount. So then they're trying to squeeze themselves into being able to hit that target number. And one of the ways of hitting that target number is to get your mortgage payments down. And if you get your mortgage payments down, then you can do that by extending the term of the loan. So just to put some figures on it, if you were to borrow £200,000, the old-fashioned 25-year mortgage term, very old-fashioned now, but like you don't have to go back that far to find a time when that was the most common. £200,000 at 5% would be £1,169 a month. Extend that to 30, which is, I think, the most common nowadays, and that brings the mortgage payments down to £1,073. Extend it to 35. You can knock a bit more money off. You get yourself down to £1,009. Extend it to 40 and you can smash yourself through the £1,000 barrier and you've got a £964 a month monthly payment. And this is what's going on, is people are being encouraged to extend the term. You can get that number down. We'll be able to lend you the money. But the cost of that over the course of the mortgage is really quite substantial. So if you were to borrow that £200,000 and the rate was to stay at 5%, you know, over a 25-year term, the interest that it would cost you would be £151,000. If you just extend it to 30 years, you'd pay £186,500 of interest. That extra 5 years will cost you £35,500 in the long run. You go to 35 years and the interest goes up to £224,000. If you go to 40 years, the interest goes up to £263,000. So that 40-year term is going to cost you £112,000 more in interest compared to borrowing over 25. But I think more importantly, the better comparison actually, because most people go 30 now, is that it's going to cost you £76,500 more in the long term than taking out the 30-year loan. So actually the system is squeezing people into something that then comes at a long-term cost to them. Mm. And arguably many of these people could probably afford a bit more money. The difference on those monthly payments between 40 years and 30 years is £109. Most people could probably, especially considering they're, you know, most first-time buyers are dual borrowers, most of them could probably stretch to an extra £109 a month between them. In fact, many of them may actually be paying rent that is more expensive than the mortgage that they're going to be paying. There are obviously costs that you need to factor in because owning a home costs money, you know, the maintenance, the repairing stuff, the, all the things that your landlord does or should do for you. But in many cases, people could afford that extra bit of money. So the question is, what can they do about it? There is something you can do about it, is if you need to do this and you need to squeeze yourself in to get that mortgage in order to be able to buy the property, don't just keep paying those lower payments, overpay slightly, and you can start to reverse the effect of this, and it will then reduce the interest that you're going to pay. Ultimately, it would clear the mortgage earlier. So if you just take responsibility for it and go, do you know what? I'm going to pay the extra £100 a month, you know, I'm just going to do that myself, then you unwind some of the effect that's going on here.
It's tough though, isn't it, Helen? People's finances are squeezed and I guess they're perhaps viewing that as a bit of a safety net, a bit of a cautious, well, you know, I'll just pay a lower amount. I'm not paying interest only, you know, so you're paying off some of it.
That's true. I can completely see why people would do this. I think as Simon said, it's about keeping on top of it, and when your own financial circumstances change, thinking, okay, maybe I couldn't afford to make any overpayments before, but maybe I can now. For example, if you get a pay rise, maybe consider putting some of that extra money onto the mortgage. Or, for example, you might get an inheritance, use a chunk of that to pay a little bit off the mortgage. It's just about sort of thinking about it sensibly, and at times when you can maybe afford to pay that extra, then do it. You don't have to commit to overpaying all the time. You can do it as just a one-off. There's no commitment. Most mortgage lenders will say that you can pay up to 10% of the balance off each year without any fees. So, that can be a fair amount. If you are able to do it, then it's a really good idea to think about it when you can.
Just to actually put the number on that, if you were to be in that 40-year mortgage scenario, right, you borrow 200 grand, 40 years, average rate 5% over that period of time. Hopefully rates will go down and you'll pay less in the future, but it stands, the longer term stands. It's going to cost you more at a higher rate or a lower rate. Even if you could just overpay by £100 a month, I say even, but money is super tight for people. I hear what you just said, but if you could just overpay by £100 a month, say £50 each if you're in a couple, you'd clear that mortgage 9 years earlier and you would save yourself about £70,000 in interest. That's the long-term goal. That's why it is really worth trying to do that. If you have to take that 40, best case scenario, don't take the 40-year mortgage. But if you have to take the 40-year mortgage, if you do just overpay it, even by a little bit, even if you just did 50 quid a month, it will make a really big difference in the long run.
From the bank's perspective, or looking at it from that way, do you think, Simon, that one, we're going to get more of this happening? I mentioned that because I believe recently the government asked the FCA to look at regulations and what they could do to increase growth, basically. And one of those was about mortgage eligibility and making it, dare I say, kind of easier for people to get on the property ladder, perhaps loosening up some of these more restrictive elements. One might be, say, mortgage terms, for example. Do you think banks will be more happy to be lending to people in older age for longer?
Yes, and what you're seeing is banks and building societies adapting to the scenario that we're in. Unfortunately, every time you loosen lending rules or you try to help the people at this exact moment in time who want to get on the property ladder but can't, and usually that is done by lending them some more money because the house prices are too high, they can't achieve that. At the moment, mortgage rates are an issue. You push up house prices a bit more and you make the problem worse. In the cold hard reality of it is what we need to do is let the market function properly, and if people can't afford to buy houses, they can't afford to buy houses, and eventually there will come a point where the price of those houses will get cheaper and then people will be able to afford to buy houses. And we have repeatedly not done that, and we didn't do it post financial crisis. They never fell back to where they should have fallen back to, and so on. But it involves a huge amount of pain for people, and that's the problem. And politicians don't want to inflict that pain on people. People don't want to feel that pain. And it's all very well for me to say that from the position of sitting in my nice house that I own with a mortgage. But if I was in the position now of wanting to buy a property and I was a first time buyer, then I'd be like, yeah, loosen them up. Let me borrow the money. I can afford to borrow the money. I'd rather be buying my own house, and I'll take it on the chin that it's really expensive than paying rent. So it's a really difficult scenario because when you look at it from the broad top-down level, there's what you should do. But then if you look at it from the personal level, there's the, well, you can't blame someone for taking the 40-year mortgage. The real winner from this, though, is banks and building societies because they get to lend people more money and charge them more interest over a longer period of time. The financial system is absolutely coining it in off of high house prices, and we, the public, are massively losing out. It would do us a huge favor if basically the government came up with some crazy plan to just devalue everyone's houses by knocking a naught off the end.
I mean, could do. I got my first mortgage statement through the post the other day. It does not make for happy reading, I'll be honest. It is quite depressing.
They get better. Okay.
And the longer, so my mum said. My mum said that
the more you continue, the more of your payments go towards paying off the debt, and the mortgage statements get better. It could be worse. You could just got your new tenancy agreement.
Helen, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think Simon absolutely hit the nail on the head with that. You know, these long mortgages are not ideal. You do end up paying an awful lot in interest. But what's the alternative? If the alternative is staying in a rented house or a rented flat, that rent is going to go up by the market rate every single year. Yep. You know, at least your mortgage might be high, but at least it's a fixed amount. At least that's a cost that's under control. And obviously over 30 years, the amount of that mortgage due to inflation, that the payments are going to feel less painful as you go on. You know, you're going to increase your loan to value. As Simon said, it gets better over time. But if the alternative to taking a massive mortgage is staying renting, then that's just ultimately always going to be worse in the long run. It's much worse to end up retired and still paying rent than retired with a mortgage that after 35 years probably feels quite small, I think is at the heart of all this.
All right then, cast your minds back to May last year when we told you on the pod of the curious case of the stolen Nectar points and heel dragging of owner Sainsbury's to do much about it. Well, it appears the problem, well, it is not getting better. In fact, it looks like it's getting worse, because during the course of December, this is money heard from nearly 100 readers who'd had their Nectar balances emptied ahead of Christmas. I mean, what a time. Now this is money can reveal that 12 million points worth £60,000 have been stolen from their readers in the past year, ranging from small amounts worth about £2.50 all the way up to £1,000. So what is going on here?
Basically, it seems like it's come on really quickly. It's kind of come out of nowhere. And we've heard from so many readers now that this has happened to. So during December alone, 100 people got in touch with us and said that they'd had their Nectar points stolen. And you might think on the face of it, oh, you know, it's just points. It's, you know, it's kind of free money. It's not a big issue. But actually, some people have £1,000 in Nectar points. A reader got in touch and said that they had £1,000 worth of Nectar points swiped. So it is actually, it's a big deal. And, you know, a lot of people will save up these points, for example, to pay for Christmas. And it seems like there's actually a really spike in this just ahead of Christmas. And, you know, people are seeing their balances that they were hoping to use to pay for a Christmas dinner, for Christmas presents, just taken from them. And the frustrating thing is, we still kind of don't have the full picture from Sainsbury's about how this is happening. So people are finding that they'll go to check their Nectar balance and everything is gone. And you can look and see where it's been spent. And quite often, it will be hundreds of miles away from where you live. So it's kind of clear that to Sainsbury's, you haven't spent these points yourself. It's very kind of out of character spending. So it seems that scammers have somehow found a way to clone Nectar card barcodes. You know, when you go and you scan your barcode at the till and you can pay with your points. It seems like they've found a way to clone those, and they're selling them on the internet, selling them in batches. You know, here's 300 Nectar account codes. The hope for the people who buy this, scammers that buy these, is that, you know, they'll buy 300, some of them will have £1 on them, but there'll be one in there that's got £1,000, and it kind of makes it worth it for them to buy them. I am surprised, actually. I mean, Nectar's been quite good at refunding people when it does happen, and we've got involved in some of those cases and pointed this out, and they will refund the points balance, but they don't seem to be kind of able to nip it in the bud. There's clearly an issue with the security on accounts that people are able to access them in this way. But it's difficult. So it's not even a reportable crime, because it's points and not money. People have tried to report this to the police, and you can't, because it's just points. I mean, does that mean that if someone got caught for doing this, they wouldn't be able to get prosecuted for it? It just seems like there needs to be some extra level of security. And it just seems bizarre to me that this keeps being able to happen. You know, is there no way that Nectar can kind of lock this down? Because we're not seeing a similar thing with other supermarkets. You know, we're not seeing the same thing on sort of Tesco club cards or any of the other cards. And it just seems that there's kind of a hole in the security here that I think Sainsbury's should be able to fix.
Listening to you there, Helen, what kind of concerns me is a lot of these companies have a lot of data on us. And it just makes me a little bit worried that if you can't add that extra level of security that you talk about, well, what other sort of data and information about us is also a little bit vulnerable? Or am I just being a little bit overly concerned about that?
No, I think you're right. And, a lot of people are concerned. Obviously, the reason why supermarkets offer these loyalty cards is to collect data on people. That's something that I think a lot of people actually don't realise. What's in it for them is that they get all this information about when you shop, where you shop, what you buy, how much you spend, and that's incredibly valuable to them. And they sell that data on as well and use it in all kinds of different ways. So that's a kind of quid pro quo of being able to collect these points and having these discounts. And I think actually probably part of the reason why scammers have kind of clocked onto this Nectar card thing is because in the last couple of years, they introduced these sort of loyalty prices. So, when you go into the supermarket and you see there's one price for people who have a Nectar card or a club card and another price for everyone else. So a lot of people who didn't used to use loyalty cards now do use them religiously. I mean, I do myself. I never used to use one before.
Simon Lambert.
Before the loyalty points were there. And now I use it every shop. So there's many, many more people using these cards, I think, which means that it's just an absolute gift to scammers, isn't it? People are piling into them and it's a much bigger opportunity for them, unfortunately.
Okay, so firstly, what are Sainsbury's saying?
We've spoken to Sainsbury's and Nectar about this multiple times over the last year, asked them to explain what's happening and whether they should be sort of looking at their security system again. This time, we asked them specifically about these customers that have lost points ahead of Christmas. And they
said, such a rubbish time, isn't it, as well? Ugh,
I know, it's a really unfortunate time because a lot of people do save them up for their sort of Christmas spending. So Sainsbury said, the security of our customer accounts is our highest priority, and we have a range of measures which detect and in many cases prevent fraud. For any customers who suspect they may have been a victim of fraud, we aim to put it right as soon as it's brought to our attention. Now, I have to say, they have been good at paying customers their points back when they flag it to Nectar. Mm. So if it does happen to you, do get in touch with them and tell them that it's happened, and hopefully they'll sort it out for you. But I think in terms of preventing it happening to you, it's really difficult because obviously Sainsbury's, they don't want to give away too much information about the measures that they're using to detect this and prevent it, because they don't want that to kind of feed into the scammers' hands. And we find that a lot with sort of fraud and scam stories. They don't want to kind of give away too much about what they're doing, because it essentially allows the fraudsters to sort of understand the rules and understand how to get around them. I can't really say how you could stop this happening to you. There doesn't really, other than, not using your Nectar card and deleting your, spending your points and deleting the app, I don't really have any advice to offer on how you can stop it happening to you, because we don't really fully understand how it's happening still.
Yeah, no, quite. Spending your points. I have them automatically turned into Avios points, I do. Simon, you famously, long-term listeners of the podcast will know that you and Lee used to laugh at me when I would get out my wallet and clatter, clatter, clatter. Now it's all on my phone. I feel very, very modern. But you would laugh at my loyalty cards. But now it's almost impossible not to have them. If you want to go into things like Tesco, into Sainsbury's, where, like Helen explained there, you have different pricing almost. It's just not worth it. This must be even more frustrating because you succumbed, Simon, didn't you? You actually had to go for that Sainsbury's, and it must feel really galling when you think, ugh, they can't get it right.
I believe my exact words were, life is too short for loyalty cards.
That is exactly your phrase, yes.
And unfortunately, my life is no longer too short for loyalty cards. My life involves two loyalty cards, which are on my phone, so that when I shop at Tesco and when I shop at Sainsbury's, I don't have to get ripped off and pay the higher prices that they charge on some things to people who don't have a Nectar card or a club card. Now, the Competition and Markets Authority, the CMA, investigated this recently, and they basically said it's working fine. People are getting discounts. I don't know. I mean, there was quite a lot of concern, especially because the price gap on some things was getting really quite big with the, if you do have a card and if you don't have a card. And the co-op does this as well with its member prices, although there's the price gap, I think, in the co-op is slightly lower. But it basically just pays to have one of these cards now. Unfortunately, that means that, what you're what you're getting in return is the lower prices, and what they're getting in return is your customer data. Mm-hmm. They're finding out what you buy and everything like that. I mean, I've had a club card for years because, well, I don't personally have a club card. My wife has a club card because my wife used to work for Tesco. And so, you know, I've got a photo of that on my phone that I use, and I had to sign up for a Nectar card. I've never used a Nectar point in my life. Maybe I should check how many I've got and see whether I can do anything with them. I just never really think that
that's not the most important thing to you, is it?
I never really think that it's worth doing. I'm not doing it for the points. Yeah. But what I would say, though, is what I have used club card points before, because I discovered that you can exchange them for Eurotunnel tickets. So you're paying for the Eurotunnel, which is now called Le Shuttle, by Eurotunnel or something like that. So, yeah, and there was a point where actually you could magnify them up by, like, every pound. You could, like, quadruple it. You can only double it, I think, now. But if you do build up a balance that's sitting there, it can be quite handy because, you know, it's expensive paying for the Eurotunnel to go on holiday, and it's quite good if you can knock 50 quid off it by paying in club card points that you wouldn't otherwise be using. Mm-hmm. One suggestion that was made when our reporter Ang was on Rip Off Britain talking about Nectar point robbery this week from one of the experts there was that maybe people just needed to not let big balances build up.
Yeah, that Helen said.
Yeah, just like spend it, like small amount, spend it, small amount, spend it, small amount, spend it. That's not really how people want to use these, so it's quite unfortunate.
That's it for part one.
I'm joined now by Lisa Kaplan from Charles Stanley for our weekly Investing Explained feature. Lisa, a quick and relatively simple question, I hope. I would like to invest £200 a month. What is an easy way to do it?
It is easy to do. I guess it's easy for me to say that. But essentially, most online platforms, and certainly ours, you can set up either a regular payment. You can either do that by direct debit or by a standing order if you want more control. I mean, I don't know your listeners' situation, but I would say in general, try to do it at the beginning of the month, because that's when you're flusher and you know, the money will definitely be there. And that money will regularly go into their account and get invested in the investments they've chosen.
And should they use an ISA?
Straightforward answer is yes. And ISA's got a beautiful tax protection around it. You don't pay any income tax if you're getting dividends on investments. And when you're selling your investments, you don't pay any capital gains tax, which has become increasingly important as the allowances have become lower and lower. So ISAs can be really, really useful. I mean, you might want to consider a pension, but that's less flexible. But it is another option that has sort of special tax treatment as well.
Lisa, thank you very much.
A pleasure.
Welcome back. Could blinding LED headlights finally become a thing of the past? Now, the government has given an update on a prospective ban. A new study is being launched into the issue whilst acknowledging public concern around the safety of bright headlights. Simon, for anyone that doesn't drive or has absolutely no idea that there were different types of headlights, I just thought sometimes someone had forgotten to take off their full beam. Educate us.
Well, I mean, it's easy to think this is just a grumpy old person thing. But it's not, unless I am a grumpy old person. I might be a grumpy old person. But no, this is a definite issue. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of reasons why this is an issue. Headlights have become substantially brighter.
Is that a fact?
Yes, yeah. It's fact.
Fact.
Right? If you say fact after it, it's a fact.
It's a fact. So
headlights have become substantially brighter. Fact. And people are being dazzled. Fact. Mm. And when you are being dazzled by someone, it is like somebody driving at you with their full beam on. And I had it happen the other day. I was driving in the car with my daughter and somebody was coming up the road towards me and I literally couldn't see because the exact angle they were at coming up the road meant that I was being completely blinded. I had to slow down pretty much to a halt because I drive with one hand out in front of me because I was like, I actually can't see. Mm. And this is becoming an increasingly common problem. The reason being, firstly, LED headlights. So most newish cars nowadays have LED headlights in them. The LED headlights are brighter and appear brighter to people. Secondly, SUVs. SUVs, the preponderance of them on the roads, they're higher riding, the headlights are further up. Thirdly, the car makers who've decided to put massive bands of light across the front of their cars as well and add more lights onto them. You know, it's like someone's going lamping.
Disco car.
Lamping in the Wild West or something, you know, driving their truck around. Disco car. And finally, people buying cheap aftermarket bulbs, which may or may not come from websites shipping cheap crap from China. They may be coming from other places. But people are fitting like cheap aftermarket bulbs into their cars that are even brighter potentially than they should be. And also, there is a function on your car where you can set the level of your headlights as to whether they are pointing slightly further up or slightly further down. And basically what that's for is if you've got your car fully loaded, then you can change the angle of them slightly so that they're still pointing down. So rather than the car being weighed down and pushing them up, it can then push them down. And there's basically a little function in the car. And a lot of people's cars have just got them set up wrong so that they're pointing up rather than down towards the road. Anyway, this started being mentioned. I don't know whether it was originally a social media thing, grumpy old and young people moaning about it or whatever, but it's gained some serious traction. And you talk to a lot of people, they're like, yeah, I have been driving and I have been blinded. And this is obviously not just annoying. It is also really quite dangerous. And I would add, I would add to this, you don't have to be driving for this to be an issue to you, although it is obviously more dangerous if you are driving towards a car in a car and you suddenly can't see where you're going. Pedestrians will be being dazzled. Cyclists will be being dazzled. But also, cyclists are dazzling people as well. I cycle I cycle to the station every day and then I get the train to London and then I cycle across London from St. Pancras to our offices in Kensington and then back. There are a sizable number of people who come past me with the most unbelievably bright bike lights on. And if you think car drivers don't have their bike lights pointing at the roads, you should see what some cyclists do. It's almost as if they deliberately aim them at the exact point where it drills directly into your brain and means you will not be able to see anything for the next 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And that is also dangerous. Basically, blinding people with bright lights so that they can't see where they're going is dangerous. There isn't actually really an official rule about how bright headlights can be.
Right.
And anyway, there are calls on the government to act. You would be perfectly right in saying, does the government not have more important things to be dealing with? But if this is potentially causing accidents, and I suspect that it is a contributing factor in some of them, then maybe it should crack down on them.
Can we find out that information, like a Freedom of Information request? Or I don't know if people write down the cause of accidents?
It'd be very, very difficult to find that out.
Right. But clearly the government are taking it seriously and, you know, people's lives and safety are vitally important. I suppose wearing shades wouldn't work, especially at night. So that's not going to work.
I just don't think that is an improvement in road safety. Everyone's driving around at night time in their sunglasses.
Neither do I.
Like a celebrity.
Is there anything, or is nothing wrong with looking like a celeb, but how can you limit glare, prevent dazzling others apart from this button and make sure that it's down? Is there anything you can do? I assume not put, like, I don't know, something over the front of them, because that would
Have a look in your car's handbook and see whether you've got a button in your car that raises your headlights up and down and whether your headlights are pointing in the right direction. Don't use dodgy bulbs.
I mean, that should be banned, I think.
Like, get them from a reputable retailer or your garage. And also maybe just like it's probably quite easy to check. Just, you know, go outside, put your car on the road, switch your lights on. Don't stand right up close to it and put your eyes straight up to the lights because it will definitely dazzle you. But, you know, go have a look. It's like, oh, maybe mine are a bit dazzling. Because actually, we were talking about this the other day and people are just driving around doing this and they're not even realising that they're dazzling other people. They have no idea that they are part of this problem.
Yeah, quite. I feel like this needs a poll on this story. Are people on your side on this one, Simon? And they feel like the government should intervene? Or are they just thinking you're a bit of a grumpy old man on it?
It's not my story. Don't blame me.
I still think you should have a poll on it. All right, then. Crane is back on the case. Let's go there now. This week, our Helen has been dealing with a rather unfortunate issue of a reader who, back in October, signed up to a new Tesco mobile contract, which came with an iPhone 14 in black. What was delivered eventually by DPD was in fact an iPhone 15 in green. I mean, even better, Helen. Green and an iPhone 15. Tesco Mobile said, you can keep the phone. Oh, okay, Helen, does this get any better? No, is the answer. Of course it doesn't, because Helen got involved. All was not well with the story, Helen.
Yes. So initially, obviously, this person was delighted. He's got the next iPhone up. Great. Tesco says he can keep it. Fantastic. But at that point, he hadn't taken the phone out of his box. So he just opened it. Oh, this isn't the right phone. Obviously, he thinks he's going to be returning it. So he doesn't touch it. He calls Tesco and says, where do I send this back? So he hangs up the phone with Tesco and then he does take it out of the box. And it's not a real phone. It's what I can only describe as a model iPhone, like an Airfix version of an iPhone. It's a plastic toy.
Like phone. One you might have on display in a shop or something.
Exactly. When you go into a shop, they obviously don't have the expensive version out. You know, the ones with they've got a sticker on the front with a picture of a screen instead of the actual screen. And like there isn't a hole for a charger. It's a dummy iPhone. And, you know, maybe it would have been funny if he'd called Tesco back and they said, oh, gosh, we're so sorry. We'll send you another phone. But that's not what happened. What happened was he called Tesco again and they said, no, the right phone was delivered. So that's it. Sorry. And this person's saying, no, but look at it. It's plastic. And like, no, sorry, the phone was delivered. And they also said, because he'd ordered this phone as part of a contract, they made him pay the bills for it. So he was paying about just over 40 quid a month for this fake phone, for airtime and for the phone on this phone that is essentially a toy. I've looked at these toy iPhones and they're actually being sold on eBay and on the internet for about a tenner. And I mean, it's just why are these things being sold? They're saying, oh, you can use it as a toy for your children. You can use it as a photography prop. Or you can use it for pranks. I mean, I think by pranks, they clearly mean scams. Yeah. It's quite bizarre. But the thing about this is, we see this more and more with deliveries. Someone somewhere along the road between the retailer and the delivery and it getting to the person's door is taking out items they think might be expensive, like a phone, swapping it in for something that weighs about the same. So when they deliver it to the customer, they pick up the box and think, yeah, that feels like it could be a phone. And then they open it and it's just, you know, you've seen case where someone's been delivered like some screws or a brick or anything that kind of has the same weight as the item. And that's clearly happened somewhere here. Neither Tesco or DPD would give any kind of details about where this might have happened or how it had happened. But clearly, I think it's been swapped out somewhere along the road. So this reader got in touch with me and I obviously happy to help. I got in touch with Tesco. They did see the error of their ways and they've sent him a proper phone, which is real. This is a real phone. It works. It has a screen. And they've also refunded him for the 2 months of airtime and the device payments, as well as a £50 gesture of goodwill. They apologised for this happening. DPD didn't respond to our request for comment. He's finally got a phone that works. Good news. But I can't believe this keeps happening. There must be a way to stop this, because it just seems like you can't really trust a parcel to be delivered anymore. It happens so often. You know, parcels get stolen, they get left somewhere silly, you don't get what you asked for. It just seems like ordering something is a complete minefield at the moment.
To a certain extent, I have quite a lot of sympathy generally for retailers, because I think to a company, delivery firms can be horrendous. Like I have had problems with every single one of them. I've never had this situation. Now, this situation really gets me. One, what major gaslighting from Tesco Mobile to be like, nope, you got your phone. Yeah, but it's fake. Nope. It's fine. You're still going to charge you. No, I'm sorry. But it's not what I ordered. Which, as we all know here on this call, and hopefully our listeners will too, you have consumer protections. And it seems to me so grossly, flagrantly not abiding by those protections. You have a contract with Tesco. It doesn't matter about DPD. it is the contract with Tesco to get you the iPhone 14 in black that's working as you want to be delivered. So I really don't understand how this kind of gaslighting behaviour by Tesco Mobile was allowed to go on for 2 months and they had to contact you, Helen. I think it's just outrageous. Look at me getting on my soapbox.
I agree. And I think there's an issue now with some retailers will, I think they can track whether the delivery van has turned up at your house. And a lot of retailers seem to think that, you know, if we can see that a delivery van went to your address and they said the parcel was accepted, then you got your item, regardless of whether the item was the thing that you
ordered.
They say, well, from our point of view, someone turned up and there's a picture on your doorstep, so sorry. Which is obviously not the correct way to deal with things at all. But looking at the comments of this article, a lot of people said, actually, if I'm buying something expensive like a phone, I just go to the shop now. It's easy, it's less hassle, there's no risk of this. And I think that's a fair response, to be honest.
But it's not just about the delivery. You must have an item that is satisfactory quality, fit for purpose, and as described. It fails on all of those counts. Yeah, I just think the whole thing is a bit of a mess at the moment. And maybe it's because so many of us are ordering online so quickly. Maybe these sort of checks and balances, you know, aren't happening. But if I was Tesco Mobile, I would be really concerned about, and if I was DPD, I'd be really concerned that where did the breach happen? And I would be trying to investigate it. Simon Lambert.
I mean, if you're going to send people stuff, right, you need to let them say to you, that's not the right thing that you sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like one of those basic things of doing internet business. I think you gotta accept that stuff happens and it's the wrong thing. We've all had it. We've all been sent the wrong thing. So, you know, it's just like, go, what are the chances of someone like faking that they've been, maybe there is a crime wave of people pretending they've been sent toy phones. Maybe that's what the pranks are. Maybe there's a massive wave of this. I don't know. But, you know,
maybe, but this is also someone who's willing to have a contract with you and pay £40 a month for it. So I sort of think that's, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I tell you what I'd be interested in, actually, on a side note from our readers as well. If you read or listen, tell me. Email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. What do you do when you're buying something off somebody online, secondhand, for example, and it's a high value item? So say you've like found something that somebody is selling on Facebook Marketplace, for example, right? Which is the Wild West, as we know. But it is also a handy place to find things that you want to buy secondhand. So say it's like 250 quid, right? So it's a big ticket item. What do you do? How do you do this? How do you pay that person and then guarantee that you get the thing? Because obviously you need to pay them before they're going to send it to you. And if you say to them, I'm just going to pay you half and I'll pay the other half when it arrives, they're going to go, well, you're just going to scam me and only pay me half. But then on the other hand, you're like, I could pay you the money and you might not send it to me. Now, in my experience, most people are just fundamentally honest and they send you what they're meant to send you and you get what you're meant to get. I bought a secondhand pair of snowboard boots, £70 the other day. The guy sent it to me. I did think, because I sent him the £70, I was like, could just rob me, couldn't he? But, you know, I got them. It's great. But it's like, what do you do? How are people dealing with this scenario? I'm quite interested to know. I mean, and then this is in the scenario where you cannot do a handover, right? Okay, like it's the kind of, you're buying something from someone who's, you know, 200 miles away. That scenario I'm talking about. Obviously, the answer to this is just get them to hand it over to you and you hand them the cash. But in the scenario where you can't do that, what are people doing? Be very interested to know.
All right, then. Right, it is podcast reader question time. And the winner of This Is Money's mug is Rab, all the way up in Scotland. I have to read this out. I love listening to your podcast. Thank you very much. And have been listening to it for years. But can I highlight one tax point that I am confused about, says Rab. When you talk about the tax trap of when people earn over £100,000 and they start to lose their personal allowance at £1 per £2 over, giving them a tax rate of 60%. In Scotland, though, we pay higher rates of tax. And for 2024-25, we pay 45% over £75,000. So does that not mean that Scots pay a tax trap of 67.5%? Thanks, Rab. Simon.
Okay. Well, so firstly, Rab, thank you for writing in about one of my pet peeves, something that that has been annoying me for 15 years or so, ever since it was introduced, right? Mm-hmm. The 60% tax trap, which I just think is an incredibly unfair bit of the tax code, whether you are in the fortunate position of earning more than £100,000 or whether you're not, I just think it's fundamentally wrong that somebody's being taxed 60% on the next pound they own. But to explain it, you are correct. The marginal rate is 67.5%. The 60% tax trap exists because, in his wisdom, former Chancellor Alistair Darling, as an emergency measure introduced after the financial crisis, a point at which people had their personal allowance removed from them. Your personal allowance is the amount of money that you can earn tax-free before you start paying tax. So at the moment, it's £12,570. Above that, you pay income tax. Now, the effect of removing it is that it creates a higher marginal tax rate. That's the amount that you pay on the next pound that you earn. The personal allowance is removed above £100,000. That is the case in England, Wales, Scotland, and so on. Okay. Mm-hmm. Officially, it is described as for every extra £2 that you earn, you lose £1 of your personal allowance. I actually think the easier way of explaining the effect of this is that for every extra £1 that you earn, you lose 50p of your personal allowance, because the effect of doing this is that it increases your marginal tax rate by 50%, by another half. It bumps up the tax rate that is official, 40% in the UK, by half. So it bumps it up to 60%, because for every pound that you're earning, half of it, you're losing the tax-free protection. And that then stops at £125,140 when your personal allowance is completely gone. So what it means is that basically you pay 40% tax up to £100,000. Then on the next pound that you earn, you pay 60% tax until you get to £125,140. And then you hit the additional rate, but you've lost all of that effect. You go back to paying 45p tax. And it is correct that this is worse in Scotland, because in their own wisdom, the Scots have their own tax rates, which are even more complicated than the UK ones. So from £12,571 to £14,876, you pay 19%. You then pay 20% to £26,561. You then pay 21% from £26,562 to £43,662. You then pay 42% to £75,000. And you then pay 45% to £125,140. And above that, you pay 48%. So that means the people caught in this 100 to £125,000 bracket, are their official tax rate is 45%. The effect of removing their personal allowance bumps that up by half. So that goes to 67.5%. And the reason why your marginal rate matters is because it's the one that you feel. It's what you'll pay when you get your pay rise, or you do an extra little bit of work, you earn another pound. It's how much of it you get to keep and how much gets taken by the government.
Simon's Star of the Week.
Okay, good news for people in Scotland. After that, Nationwide has some house price to earnings ratios out. And basically what it shows is that the part of the UK with the lowest house price to earnings ratio is Scotland, where it's just 3, which compares to an average in London, where it is the highest of 8.
All right, then. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions of the team, anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
You can email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. Send us your questions for us to answer, and we'll get those mugs out to you. Or if you've got any other comments or anything else you want to tell us, what are you doing about that Facebook Marketplace high value item thing that I was telling you about? Have you been dazzled? Georgie wants to know. Send all your emails about dazzling to Georgie with the word dazzle in the subject line, so that our inbox is full of emails with the word dazzle.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be LED line. Lights. It can be anything. What dazzles you? Really?
Is it Georgie Frost that's dazzling you? She wants to hear from you. Look, you've heard her read out the emails where people pick up.
True. We need it. Validate us. Yeah. If you like our podcast talking about validate us, why not rate us wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.